Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. Visit a farm, escape through the net. Visit EscapeMaker.com for more.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. Everybody knows sushi, but maybe not much about kaiseki or izakaya, despite the fact that there are over 1,500 Japanese restaurants in New York. So I'd like to demystify Japanese food in the program with my cool guest. And my guest today is Yuji Haraguchi, who is an entrepreneur, chef, former fishmonger, and owner of a great Japanese restaurant called Okonomi in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Okonomi serves a traditional Japanese breakfast during the day and original ramen at night. His previous project was Yuji Ramen, the highly successful ramen shop at Whole Foods Market, Bahrain. Welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So first, when did you come to the U.S. and what made you become a fishmonger?
So I came to U.S. as a student first, and then went back to Japan, and then I got a job that I didn't enjoy. So, but I always wanted to go back to the U.S. and then pursue my hobby. Mm-hmm. So, which was cooking. So, I came to Boston because of the job that I found, mm-hmm. and then which was the seafood company owned by Japanese people. So, that was sort of like my, first.
Did you come to New York, work in New York, or somewhere else?
No, I was always in Boston.
Okay.
Yeah, New York, I just went to visit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, but I was mostly in Boston for the first 3 years.
Okay, yeah. So you studied everything about fish?
Yeah, so Boston has an amazing, actually, fish port, seafood port, mm-hmm. where actually a lot of boats land and unload the fish. Mm-hmm. So my job was to do pretty much everything from finding the fish, from purchasing, making a sales call, deliver it to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So it was an amazing place to learn the whole system of how seafood distribution is operated, mm-hmm. From the fishermen to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So it's like a full education, kind
of. Yeah, it was a great education. Yeah, like when I was in Japan, cooking was my just hobby, so I had no idea how to break down the fish, didn't know anything about the fish, but the job that became available happened to be just the seafood, mm-hmm. which was interesting enough. So I joined, and then with every day I learned something new.
Right.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I understand that many American chefs who are interested in really high quality fish go to your place. Used to go to your your business.
Yeah.
Like, so you just go to person.
Mm.
Right. Okay. And then so I remember you told me that it was, I think it's 2011, when you were working as a fishmonger still. Mm. We've been friends for a long time, but you told me that I want to open a ramen shop. And I was like, did you lose your mind? Because the market was so competitive. There's so many new ramen shops opening. So why did you decide to open a ramen shop?
So funny thing is, like, ramen was my least favorite thing to eat growing up until the moment that I wanted to start a ramen shop. But as a fishmonger, I saw so many different Japanese restaurants, mostly sushi restaurant. And then throughout my career, just realized that the ramen was a growing food trend. Mm-hmm. But that was still at the beginning part. So then I thought that if I start something new at this stage of a growing market, I could impact the future growth of the market. So that's why I just wanted to put myself into the ramen business.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be a big influencer.
Yeah, I thought there's just so much, like in the US, like when you think about sushi, there are so many different types and so many different creations mm-hmm. that you don't see in Japan. Then I thought that the ramen at that time, everybody was making the same kind of ramen. So I thought if I can make something truly original, I could change mm-hmm. the market.
Yeah. Right, and you actually did, I think. So, yeah. So how did you start Yuzu Ramen?
So Yuzu Ramen started as a, I'll say, pop-up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when I was selling fish,
as a fishmonger.
As a fishmonger, yes. Mm-hmm. So I just actually asked Roberto's.
Okay, yeah, here the fire station.
Yeah, because I had ideas, but I never worked in a restaurant, so I had to kind of test my ramen. So their owners, Carl, was kind enough to let me come mm-hmm. into the restaurant mm-hmm. Thursday night after they finished the service. So mm-hmm. after midnight, I brought noodles and all the stuff that I prepared. And then they had a noodle basket going for me, so I just came in and then dropped the noodles and then served to the staff and also the customer that were still there. Mm-hmm. So that's how I sort of started Yuzu Ramen.
Mm, that's interesting. Italian pizza place serving ramen midnight.
Yeah, it was just, I just needed a place where I could just test my ideas mm-hmm. and passion.
Right. And you moved on to Smorgasburg, which is a big food market, vegan big food market in Williamsburg.
Right. So after my doing pop-up, I got into Brooklyn Smorgasburg mm-hmm. and then every weekend mm-hmm. yeah, I wanted to create something new to test out to the customers mm-hmm. yeah, and while keeping the signature dishes.
Mm. Mm. So what kind of ramen did you serve there?
So my original style of ramen is a mazemen style ramen, which is a brothless. So
right, just for the listeners who doesn't know too much about ramen. So ramen usually is a soup and noodles. And the soup can be soy-based or salt-based or the pork bone-based, mm-hmm. that kind of like basic types, right? But then you didn't serve that style of classic soup ramen because...
Yeah, so when I sort of... when I look at the ramen at the 3-4 years ago, I just thought that it's not always easy for some people in the U.S. to eat a noodle mm-hmm. in a hot broth.
Right. So and you have to slurp.
You have to slurp. It is not culturally correct thing,
right.
I guess.
Right.
But so since I discovered this mazemen style ramen broth in Japan, then I thought this was the perfect mm-hmm. way for. Customers here mm-hmm. to eat, yeah, especially if they're not like familiar with the way the traditional ramen is eaten with mm-hmm. the broth.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So going back to what the dishes you served at Smorgasburg, what kind of mazemen?
Right. So since my background is seafood, so every season I served mazemen ramen with a theme of a seasonal seafood. Mm-hmm. For instance, like a soft shell crab, a sea urchin, mm-hmm. Monkfish liver, and then tuna. Mm-hmm. So anything that's available, I just every weekend I just try to make into ramen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was actually every weekend I created something new.
Right. Mm,
it was very exciting. Yeah. Mm,
that's interesting because typically the toppings of ramen tend to be meat, like pork or vegetables.
Right.
And then you stuck with fish just because you have a mission of promoting fish here? Or what
yeah,
is
so there are a lot of seafood in the U.S. that people are not fully taking advantage of. Mm-hmm. It simply just means that it's underutilized, but it's highly valued in Japan. Mm-hmm. So, like for instance, like the greatest example would be the sea urchin. Mm-hmm. The sea urchin in the US is not as highly valued as the one in Japan. So I could use a lot of it here, mm-hmm. and make it into ramen with a lot of it uni, mm-hmm. and then still make it affordable.
Mm. Right. So how did you use that?
So the important thing about the mazumen that I created is that the theme of the dish has to coat the noodle so that the toppings and the noodles are not separated, mm-hmm. which is the case for a lot of places. So
it's like a pasta sauce.
Pasta sauce, yeah. Right. But the pasta sauce and the toppings have to be the same ingredient, mm-hmm. but are just cooked in different ways. Mm-hmm. So that's for sauce, I make sea urchin miso sauce, mm-hmm. that goes on top of the noodle, mm-hmm. which is hot. So when you mix it, mm-hmm. it goes around the noodles, and you're going to also have the fresh sea urchin on top. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have like two different layers of flavors of sea urchin in the noodle. Yeah,
I'm hungry. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you also did a pop-up, which is a kind of a more stable pop-up, which mm-hmm. is at Kinfolk Studio in Williamsburg.
Yes. So that was actually before Smorgasburg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. That was 2013, February to June.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that was actually my very first pop-up after Roberto's.
Okay.
So the owner, Brandon, actually I saw him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to the guys at the owners at the Kinfolk Studio. Mm-hmm. So I just started as a two nights ramen Thursday and Friday, mm-hmm. and then became three nights, mm-hmm. Through Saturday, mm-hmm. and then I did it for half a year.
Right. Mm. Cool. Sounds like you are solidly, gradually building your stage, and then you jumped onto Whole Foods, Bowery's food court, an independent restaurant, ramen shop.
Mm.
So how did it happen?
So the Also, Whole Foods just came to me. I mean, I guess they found us through Smorgasburg. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to have sort of a semi-permanent vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't really have any restaurant. So, of course, I would challenge mm-hmm. and then try to be as successful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing, you had an a la carte menu, but also you had a ramen tasting menu, which is... To me, ramen is casual. Like in Japan, you just eat, and even like standing eating.
Right.
But then you made it a formal tasting menu. So what is it, and why did you do it?
Right. So there were two things that made me start. The first thing was that the where the location of where the kitchen was located inside a Whole Foods market, it was not a highly has a lot of food traffic,
mm-hmm.
so it was important to bring that attention to that location, so that people know that we are there cooking usually ramen.
Right.
But in order to do that, I wanted to do something really creative and something people can really talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought this concept of ramen omakase, so which is a tasting of all different kinds of ramen,
mm-hmm.
Made in different shapes and different ways of eating.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason was many times, since I do a lot of seafood ramen,
mm-hmm.
A lot of customers from pop-up said, I wish I could eat a little bit of everything. Then I always thought that I wanted to do a tasting menu, mm-hmm. for them so that they could have a little bit of everything.
Mm,
yeah.
Right. So how many courses and how much was it?
So I started as five courses,
mm-hmm.
At the very beginning part,
mm-hmm.
and then I served at $45,
mm-hmm.
For five different kinds of ramen.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe you can run through an example of one dinner, what kind of ramen you served.
For the tasting?
Yeah.
Yeah, tasting, the very first night I did the salmon cheese chilled mazumen,
mm-hmm.
Uni miso ramen ravioli.
Mm-hmm. So ravioli.
Ravioli.
Of the ramen noodle, like the dough?
Yes, yes. Huh. And then...
But wait. So just for the listeners, I'm including me, the ramen dough, what's the difference between, say, pasta, and what kind of ingredients? And what's the difference?
I don't think... I'm not a noodle expert, but as far as I understand, I think just the only difference is that they both have flours and water,
mm-hmm.
and then the ramen... as the liquid solution called Kansui.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the alkalized.
Alkaline solution, mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes it more gluten developed and more chewy.
Okay.
To me, that was the only ingredient that differentiates the pasta dough and ramen dough. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, okay, as long as I put the kansui into a dough, I can call it as ramen dough, whether it's with the whole wheat flour, whether it is with the seaweed powders or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that made me more creative,
okay.
I think. Yeah.
Right. So the texture-wise, it's more solid? And
yeah, it's more solid, more nice. Like chewiness.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after ravioli, what
ravioli,
was
the one? I did a squid ink... squid ink ramen shaped in the shell, the pasta shell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so made a shell and then did a squid tantan sauce, which is a bolognese sauce made from only from squid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's usually tantan sauce is a pork, ground pork,
mm-hmm.
but I made a ground squid and then cook it in the same way.
Right.
That became the sauce and then. Clam, coarse with chewed ramen broth gelatin with hot noodles.
Right.
And then the last course was smoked mussel shoyu ramen, which I use a French press to infuse a smoke of mussel into the broth and the customer pour it just like they serve coffee.
Oh,
yeah, wow. That was really fun. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, right. Like a French press pot.
French press ramen, yeah, like instant smoked ramen broth. Yeah.
And the other thing you said, you used a lot of stock from bones, meat bones,
yeah,
which was available from Whole Foods.
Right. So the always my idea was a mottainai.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an expression in Japan saying what a waste. They don't waste. And then there were so many seafood that were mottainai to me. That's why I started using all those to make it available and then
meaning the fish bones,
yeah, fish
colors,
fish bones colors, I mean among fish livers, all these underutilized seafood, yeah, was really mottainai to me, to my team as well. So and then the same philosophy applied to the bones that were being not utilized at the butcher counter of Whole Foods, which was underneath of the my ramen station. So I got all the bones that was just available, didn't have any specific request or ratio of what kind of bone. We just used whatever they had, and then it's changed daily, so we call it daily shoyu ramen.
Right. So surf and turf.
Surf and turf, yeah.
Meat stock.
Yeah,
and
meat
then
stock
fish
and
then topping.
Fish toppings. And then the fish bones. That was, yeah, yeah.
Right. So so the tasting menu, did people like it?
Yeah, it was, we still do it after 2 years. And then I had one last night and people were...
At Okonomi.
Yeah, keep enjoying. We keep creating new dishes. Yeah, so every season, every... Yeah, time we come up with new ideas. Yeah, it's gonna continue.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope.
So now we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Yuji's that amazing restaurant Okonomi and his menu. So please stay with us.
Farm Escape. EscapeMaker.com, a guide to local getaways, is offering a two-night farm escape that includes lodging, a visit to an apiary, wine tasting at a vineyard, and a special tour of Bobolink Dairy and Bakehouse in Milford, New Jersey. Transportation is included. For details, visit EscapeMaker.com or come by the Bobolink Dairy stand at the new open-air Fulton Stall Market on Front Street in the South Street Seaport District. Located where New York City's public food markets began in the 1800s, Fulton Stall Market is open weekends 10 to 5 and is the first farmers market in the city to offer ready-to-eat foods made by the farmers who produce them, along with a radio station, live music, and cooking workshops for families. now offering spring flowers and plants, organic vegetables, pizza made in a wood-burning oven using farm ingredients, local fruit preserves, yogurts and ice cream, and Bobo Link Dairy's famous artisanal cheese and breads. The market is a great reason to rediscover the authentic seaport. For more information, visit FultonStallMarket.com.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. My guest today is Yuji Haraguchi, the owner of the great restaurant Okonomi in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. So we've been talking about how you established a reputation as a talented ramen chef at the Whole Foods Market. Then you decided to open Okonomi in May 2014. Why?
So having my own restaurant was my long-time dream ever since the day I started cooking as a hobby. So that was 10 years of my dream coming true. So
that was quick.
Yeah, it was a if you think about 10 years, it's a long time, but I had so much to learn every year, I guess. So it was I almost felt that I was a little bit early, but I was very glad that I made this happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you chose a place not in Manhattan but in Williamsburg. Why was that?
So I always imagined my restaurant to be a very small neighborhood restaurant where people are, and I serve healthy food. So I just wanted to find the right neighborhood that meets what we love to do.
Right. So Okonomi serves there's two themes. One is Japanese breakfast and the ramen. During the day, you serve traditional Japanese breakfast, which is very difficult even to find in Japan. If you stay at the traditional Japanese hotel, that's almost the only place I can think of. But you serve it in New York. And why did you decide to serve Japanese breakfast?
So that was the first thing that I always wanted to eat when I go back to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's savory breakfast with a good, nice roasted seafood. And then there is nothing... no place like that as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then my seafood background also matches perfect with that thing, so mm-hmm. I decided to do a Japanese breakfast mm-hmm. with a daily change locally caught seafood.
Okay. Yeah. Right, so because the Japanese traditional breakfast is always with baked fish and rice, miso soup, mm-hmm. and a couple pickled, kind of thing, right? So
very balanced diet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, actually, I've been to your restaurant like almost 10 times just for breakfast, and I feel always good, more energy in the morning.
Yeah, our restaurant doesn't use any butter and any oil. Mm-hmm. Everything is cooked in hot water and then in an oven with the fat that's inside the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So what exactly you serve on your menu, the Japanese breakfast?
The Japanese breakfast that we do here consists of brown rice
mm-hmm.
with seasoned dry bonito flake
mm-hmm.
and then miso soup
mm-hmm.
that has whatever the vegetable that was available
mm-hmm.
and then your choice of your fish. We usually have two or three kinds, and then the shioyaki style, which means salt, saikyoyaki, meaning miso, sweet miso marinade mm-hmm. and then the sake kasu marinade,
sake kasu is a sake leaf.
Sake leaf, yes.
Right. It's a full of umami.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we prep, and also kombu cure. Mm-hmm. So we use a dry seaweed to cure the fish.
Mm-hmm.
That also add another umami into the fish
right.
Without adding the actual salt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the main fish. And then you always have a blanched vegetable and pickled vegetables and a small baked egg omelette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's the price?
Price is $15. To $19 Monday through Friday, depending on the size of the fish and the kind of the fish.
Mm-hmm.
The weekends are $19
mm-hmm.
With the extended side dishes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we also do specials. Last weekend we did a Mother's Day specials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you get that quality fish that changes daily? Do you have a relationship with the fish, fishermen?
Right. So, one thing I learned, the learned from my seafood career mm-hmm. is that the seafood is always the perfect quality when they're in the ocean. There is no, unless it's farm raised, mm-hmm. and then the fish that we serve is the wild fish, so that it's really up to who is gonna bring it for you mm-hmm. and how fresh it is, and also how they handle it. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that makes the difference, because there is no so much difference in a wild fish in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to have the good relationship with the fish prepare that you use. I mean, that was what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that the fish I get right now comes from a local Japanese fish company called Nishimaru. Mm-hmm. They go to Fulton Fish Market every morning. So they don't have any fish that's in a storage. It's just the morning they go there and pick up whatever was the freshest. That's mm-hmm. how I order too.
Okay.
So I always, not always get everything that I order, but they just replace with whatever was the fresher,
mm-hmm. right.
which I love. Yeah.
I'm just curious, you know, a lot of chefs here, Japanese or American chefs, go to you know, Tsukiji fish markets, mm. You know, vendors,
mm-hmm.
which is the world's biggest fish market.
Right.
And supposedly they have the best of the best in mm-hmm. the world, but you're not interested in getting fish from Tsukiji?
Yeah, Tsukiji, getting fish from Tsukiji will be probably the, I'll say, the best option. Mm-hmm. As far as the quality goes,
mm-hmm.
because they package, they also kill fish in always the right way, and then store at the right temperature.
Mm-hmm.
However, the price point will be really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I know from my career,
mm-hmm.
and then it won't be a neighbor food restaurant if mm-hmm. it's $30, $50 set meal. So, but it's more challenging for me to work with the people here and then work with the fishermen, hopefully, to be able to bring the level of the food, seafood distribution mm-hmm. to almost the Tsukiji level.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more interesting and exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And so I heard it's very hard to get a table, especially on the weekend, okonomi, for the breakfast menu.
It is, because we have only 12 seats.
Okay.
Yeah, it is the size that I can personally manage,
mm-hmm.
and I can see all the customers,
mm-hmm.
and I can wash all the dishes
mm-hmm.
to make sure that no food is coming back,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the reason. If I have a bigger restaurant, maybe there won't be much wait, but I would rather make sure that everybody's comfortable, everybody having a good time, everybody having good food,
mm-hmm.
With no food coming back.
Mm-hmm. Right. So how long the wait could be on weekend?
Weekend, it really depends on what time. Like lunchtime could be more people. So like I'll say 30 minutes to 1 hour and a half, like in between.
Okay, mm. that's
but not bad. No, always.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It just depends on the day. Yeah.
Right. And there's a cafe around the corner.
Cafe around the corner, yes.
Yeah. All right. And now let's talk about your dinner menu, which is very innovative, I heard. So ramen is a dinner menu.
We are sort of evolving Yuji ramen under okonomi.
Mm-hmm.
So we flip the menu at 6 o'clock and then start Yuji ramen menu.
Mm-hmm.
Being at the okonomi, serving breakfast makes our ramen more creative and more exciting, because we break down a lot of fish,
mm-hmm.
more than before. So the fish bones and the fish livers, fish melt, fish roll, whatever that comes to fish, we try to make dish out of it for ramen in the evening.
Right, that's another mottainai, wasteless.
Right, so I tell customers, it's two different meal, but you are eating the entire fish, the same fish throughout the day.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really hard to utilize the entire fish
mm-hmm.
with one type of cooking method mm-hmm. and one type of meal. But since we do two different meals, one roasted loin mm-hmm. meat and the other broth with the bones and the head.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it really no food waste and also really delicious.
Mm, that reminds me of the recent dinner series by Dunbarber at Bull Hill. Mm. like wasted menu. No waste at all.
Yeah, like people, I always tell people that when, like whether it is meat or seafood, when it is as a entire animal, there is no waste. People would agree because it's a one thing. Mm-hmm. But as soon as people put the knife into that whole animal, they will start separating what's waste, what is not waste. Mm. That is really up to the people.
Right.
But as a one living animal, there is no waste because it's one thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. That's a very different mindset.
Yeah, so I think it's really up to the people. It's like, like to me, the bones that were not being used at the market, the meat butcher market, was a treasure. But for some people, it was trash.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same mindset. So.
Right. It used to be that the tuna, the fatty tuna, used to be thrown away in Japan because people didn't like fatty fish, and it's now like a diamond. And but I started to see, like in Western restaurant, even skin of fish, it's fried, made crisp, and used as a garnish. So there may be some change.
Yeah, I think like it's really hard to break that boundary. So I always thought the important thing is to make people realize that it is delicious. That has to come first. Like our team is goal is to achieve Montanai cooking, but it has to be delicious, and then people will realize that it is not a waste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it can be delicious.
Right. Mm. So, what's the delicious example of ramen that you're currently serving?
So, the most recent one that kind of signifies our philosophy is shabu shabu shio ramen.
Okay.
So usually our ramen broth is a mix of pork bone, chicken bones, and then but we create seafood bones of broth, 100%, like no meat added, and then we can make at at a small volume, not too much, but sometimes
pescatarian
ramen, yes, but that comes only from the fish that we serve for breakfast, and then we make that super deep flavor, but not too rich, very clear broth, salt based ramen, so which you can't really add like a miso or soy sauce flavor. You really taste the broth.
Mm.
I love the shio ramen that we have, and then also the meat becomes thin sliced sashimi.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to the shio ramen broth, and then customer dip the fish into the broth and lightly cook the fish, and then almost like a medium rare, and then you sort of wrap the noodle with a slice of sashimi, shabu shabu style, and then eat it together, and then you're eating the broth, and then the slice of sashimi that came from the same fish.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because the shabu shabu, for listeners who don't know the shabu shabu usually is there's a boiling pot of water, and then very thin beef
is meat, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's just dipped, and then you eat at the table, very delicate.
Right.
So you created a version of ramen, and there's no boiling pot, and then instead you use a ramen broth.
Right.
And
so it's just hot enough to cook it, so it works. Yeah. Because this idea came from actually the pop-up that we did in Tokyo. So we normally serve roasted seafood on top of shoyu ramen as a topping instead of roasted pork meat. Then the fish we got for the pop-up dinner in Tokyo was so good that we didn't want to cook it at all. So then we decided, why don't we just slice sashimi and put it on top of the broth? And then the Japanese customer totally loved it, because they told me that it's like a shabu shabu ramen, because you have a slice of sashimi on top of the broth and noodle, and which is lightly cooked, and then that made me realize that you can do a lot more with fresh seafood.
And how much is the bowl?
The shabu shabu shio ramen is $16.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be there tonight. And then any other interesting, innovative ramen example that you're serving now?
So, kaisen hiyashi chuka. Hiyashi chuka is a chilled summer ramen noodle. And then it's usually served with cucumbers, tomatoes, mm-hmm. and then cooked, shredded egg omelette.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like that name by itself represents the summer, like watermelon.
Right. Hiyashichuka.
Right.
And then since we have so many different types of seafood, mm-hmm. like I counted other night that we had more than 10 different kinds of fish on one menu.
Wow.
Ramen night. So, and then the kaisen implies a mix of fresh seafood.
Mm-hmm.
So we combined that hiyashichuka idea with the kaisen concept because that's what we have,
mm-hmm.
and then make into one dish. So you're going to have chilled summer noodle, and vinegar base, sweet soy, sesame, and then you're going to have three or four different kinds of sashimi,
mm-hmm.
which is diverse, like one's pickled, one's vinegar cured, one's fresh, one's hot water blanched. You're going to have different variety of fish on the noodle, sometimes with the sea urchin, and then you mix it up and then eat it together with noodle, just like us.
Wow, that's amazing, because your kitchen is super small and it's totally open kitchen, just like a little studio apartment, dining room and kitchen, so you do a lot of work.
Yeah,
in
when people saw my restaurant before being built out, they thought there is no way that this could be a restaurant. It is way too small. But I think that it's not a small at all, because you can do so much within a small space.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the perfect size. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So space-wise, it's mottainai.
Mottainai. And then if you have more space, you tend to have more waste.
Mm.
But if you have a limited space, all the ingredients are super fresh, mm-hmm. because you have nowhere to store.
Right.
You just get in the morning and use it, and then get more in the morning, mm-hmm. next day, and then use it. So it is the best way for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and stays fresh. Everything
stays fresh. Yes,
right.
That's why we have no menu in the breakfast, and then we handwrite the menu every night for dinner, because
okay.
it changes all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the weekdays, and then you have a weekend tasting menu.
Yeah. So we continue doing the ramen omakase tasting menu after the brunch service,
mm-hmm.
which is Japanese breakfast. So we technically do three different kinds of experience at Okonomi. So breakfast, and then the Yuji ramen a la carte, and then Yuji ramen tasting menu.
Mm-hmm.
So the tasting menu is a weekend night, Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how many dishes? And
so right now we are doing 9 dishes.
Okay, and how much?
It's 100.
Okay, that's a value.
Right. Yeah, you get, just like a sushi omakase,
mm-hmm.
each course is seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like a sushi omakase style, but it's all ramen, all different ways of eating ramen, and mm-hmm. then ways of noodles.
Right. Yeah. So how can you get the ticket?
So we use a website mm-hmm. called seatme.com. And mm-hmm. then if you can look for ramen omakase
mm-hmm.
under seatme.com, mm-hmm. you can find the link over our tasting menu.
Mm-hmm.
And then the customer just go online and then click the date,
mm-hmm.
Saturday or Sunday. We do monthly, so you can find May right now, and then the last weekend of the month, we release is the next whole month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we do the reservation.
Okay. Mm. Yep. And also you serve a very beautiful plate, right?
Mm.
Japanese style
right.
plate. So can you tell me more about the what do you do
right.
with the in terms of that Japanese,
So, since Japanese food is so simply executed, it's usually sliced or it's usually just skewered and roasted.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really important to have beautiful ceramics,
mm-hmm.
and then the beautiful ingredients. So I knew that I could get good seafood, but I wanted to make sure that I have a beautiful place that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to meet this amazing potter. His name is Jordan Klong. He used to own a restaurant called Eat in Greenpoint. Now he's full-time pottery artist. And then every month, we collaborate, and he makes a shape of our bowls, sake cups, beer cups, all the bowls that we serve at the ceramics that we serve at the restaurants are made by him. Mm-hmm. And then it is my dream is to make Japanese food localized, mm-hmm. and then grow with the local people. Mm-hmm. So this is another aspect of my passion. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Right. So collaboration with him.
He's amazing, yes. Right. Yeah. So yeah. He's now in upstate firing 10 more ramen bowls, different glazes, mm-hmm. 5 more water cups, and then he's going to bring them down mm-hmm. Thursday next week. Yeah, so I'm very excited. It's like a omakase. So mm-hmm. I just tell him the shape, and then he just does different finishes all the time. Yeah, he almost doing R&D with our pottery.
Okay, right. So yeah. you can purchase his work?
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes we have a pottery sales. Mm-hmm. Yeah, outside of the restaurant mm-hmm. with his work. So yeah, hopefully in the future I would like to have a okonomi like. Ceramic item lineup.
Okay. Yeah. Great. So you should go to your Facebook Okonomi page.
Yeah, Facebook. Yes.
To get information.
To get information, we normally announce it. So we don't do it all the time. Mm. I wish we could. We don't have enough space and time. But I would like to showcase his work, which is making our restaurant really beautiful.
Right.
So
great.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, thank you for joining us today, Yuji, and
thank you for
being such a wonderful ambassador of Japanese cuisine. And listeners, if you'd like to know more about Yuji's restaurant, please visit www.okonomibk.com. That's OKONOMIBK.com, and the Facebook page of Okonomi. And if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And you can also reach me at akikokatayama.com. Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.